The Customer Service Committee meeting will now begin. For the record, this is a virtual meeting and all board members and participants are by telephone. For the record, I will now take roll call. Board Member Fulton?
Here.
Board Member Gordon?
Here.
Board Member Rasmussen?
Here.
Board Member Caulfield?
Here.
Thank you. Board Member Greaves is absent at today's meeting. Board members, at this time, we will ask for public comments on the agenda. Each speaker will have 2 minutes to provide comments. The first speaker is Sally Geller.
Good morning. Sally Geller from the Lackawanna Coalition. I'm desperately looking for my piece of paper here. Oh, there we go. Okay. Good morning. We are concerned about the lack of seating at train stations, especially when there's a long connection. Having to stand without relief can present physical problems for some riders. Though we have some understanding of your decision to lock stations, which avoids the cost of repeated sanitizing, outside benches should be available for travelers waiting for a train, just as bus stop benches, which are generally smaller, with less opportunity for passengers to maintain distance from each other, those have remained available throughout. Perhaps simple signs could be posted reminding people to keep their distance. Also, knowing that PTC testing at New Jersey Transit is way behind schedule, we urge you to make that a priority while ridership is low to ensure that you are able to catch up and make progress toward on-time final implementation. Thank you.
Thank you. The next speaker is Joseph Clift.
Good morning. This is Joe Clift. I want to talk about PTC. You should have an email from me forwarded by staff, which I appreciate. And I believe, based on the limited information that's available, because New Jersey Transit does not provide any information to the public, the MTA, Long Island Railroad, and Metro North provide tremendous information. But I believe, based on the statistics reported to the FRA, that it's highly likely that New Jersey Transit will fail the complete implementation of PTC by the December 31st deadline. If you look at the chart in my email, line 4, row 4, which should be in red, shows New Jersey Transit only has 5% of its route miles under revenue service demonstration, or PTC. If you look across, the other railroads are much higher. Software concerns, line 12, safety plan submission, latest is June, next month, hasn't happened yet, and interoperability. None of the five railroads that New Jersey Transit hosts have been set up to work PTC. A letter was sent out May 21st, a week ago, by the FRA administrator to the executive director and the governor, and I think the chair of the board, saying you're at risk. And I believe you need to think right now. Get a clear picture. I've asked for 4 points. Get a clear picture from New Jersey Transit of the situation. If December 31st is unlikely, Plan Bs need to be developed at this time. Be happy to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Board members, there are no further comments. The first staff report is the Operations and Customer Service Update, Stuart Mader.
Thank you, Joyce. Good morning. This is the Operations and Customer Service Report with Trends, Analysis, and Insight for April 2020. Starting with the charts for rail, on-time performance was 95.7%, exceeding the 94.7% on-time performance goal for rail. April performance represented an increase of 1.1 percentage points versus March, at a year-over-year increase of 1.9 percentage points. Contributing factors to on-time performance included COVID-19-related staff shortage on April 5th, 12th, and 19th. There was a small uptick in feedback on train horn blowing regarding trains 4785 and 9625. Rail operations investigated and reminded crews to be cognizant. However, horn blowing at grade crossings is required under federal law to ensure the safety of communities served by trains. Rail equipment reliability, measured as overall mean distance between failures, improved from 88,881 miles in March to 91,313 miles in April. This is the ninth consecutive month of improvement, as well as a dramatic year-over-year improvement of 30% versus April 2019 and 32% improvement since January of 2019. Moving to rail performance by terminal and time, New York Penn Station trains reported overall on-time performance of 95.1% in April, a 3.1 percentage point increase from March, and a year-over-year increase of 3.1 percentage points. Hoboken Terminal trains reported overall on-time performance of 97.7% in April, a 0.7 of a percentage point increase from March, and a year-over-year increase of 1.5 percentage points. System-wide trains reported increases in off-peak performance and decreases in weekend performance from March to April. Rail operations is currently running service based on a President's Day schedule with additions and modifications to ensure that stations and lines that would ordinarily receive very limited or no service on President's Day are provided with weekday service. This schedule provides additional trains on most lines during what would normally be considered peak times on weekdays. However, because it's not a normal weekday schedule, there are no trains that are defined as peak trains. Moving now to the bus charts, on-time performance was 98.8% in April, the highest on-time performance since January 2017 and well exceeding the 90% goal for bus. April performance represented an increase of 2.9 percentage points versus March, and the 12-month rolling average for bus on-time performance was up by 2.1 percentage points year over year to 93.1%. The majority of customer feedback centered on overcrowding, bypassed commuter station, and employee performance. These inquiries were largely related to service operating on a modified Saturday schedule in early April and were reduced or eliminated on routes by adjusting service to a modified weekday schedule mid-month. Bus operations continues to monitor service levels and make adjustments whenever customer counts on board buses approach the 50% limit required by Executive Order 125. Employee performance feedback in all three divisions was investigated and the appropriate corrective actions taken, including supervisors monitoring routes and issues addressed with operators. On-time performance improved for all five major terminals in April. For the 14th month, Hoboken Terminal's year-over-year on-time performance went up significantly by 4.7 percentage points from 95.1% to 99.8%. Port Authority Bus Terminal's performance increased significantly as well from 90.5% to 97.6% of buses departing on time. While Durand Transportation Center increased from 95.6% to 99.2%. Newark Penn Station on-time performance improved from 96.5% to 99.8%, and Atlantic City Bus Terminal on-time performance improved from 97.7% to 99.4%. Bus equipment reliability, measured as overall miles between in-service delays, decreased from 15,078 miles in March to 14,036 miles in April. Moving to light rail, overall on-time performance was 98.5% in April 2020, exceeding our 97.3% goal at a 1.2 percentage point year-over-year increase. The 12-month rolling average on-time performance for all three light rail lines increased by 0.4 of a percentage point year-over-year to 97.1%. Hudson Bergen light rail on-time performance increased to 98.7% in April. Delays were caused by a brake fault on April 7th, door malfunction issues on April 6th and 16th, a car blocking the tracks on April 28th, and police activity on April 6th, 8th, 10th, 17th, and 20th. Newark Light Rail on-time performance slightly decreased, but still came in at a near-perfect 99.7% in April. Delays were caused by a pedestrian accident on April 17th, mechanical fault on April 20th, and a customer in need of medical attention on April 29th. River Line on-time performance slightly decreased to 97.1% in April. Delays were caused by a downed pole obstructing the track on April 2nd, a car strike on April 18th, police activity on April 6th, 14th, 19th, and 27th, and customers in need of medical attention on April 4th, April 28th, and April 30th. Light rail equipment reliability, measured as mean distance between failure, continues to remain relatively static for Newark Light Rail when compared to the previous month. Hudson Bergen light rail equipment reliability continued to increase for the 12th consecutive month, with a notable increase from 32,347 miles in March to 34,322 miles in April. River line equipment reliability increased for the sixth consecutive month in April, with an increase from 11,050 miles in March to 11,819 miles in April. On the next page, Access Link on-time performance was 99.1% in April 2020, a very impressive year-over-year increase of 10.6 percentage points. The 12-month average for Access Link on-time performance was 90.5%, a year-over-year increase of 0.6 of a percentage point, and both exceeded the 89% statewide goal based on current on-time performance thresholds for each of the regions served by Access Link. Trip count was 38,355 for April, a year-over-year decrease of 114,208. Total number of cases for April was 18, a year-over-year decrease of 370, and cases were split 11% for the New Jersey Transit Operations Center and 89% for the regions. The top three customer concerns were no-shows and delays, transfer trips, and vehicle operator coverage. There were 8 service delay inquiries for April, a year-over-year decrease of 190. The majority of service delay complaints were reported in Region 5, Essex, Morris, Somerset, and Union counties. Service delay complaints are being addressed in several ways, including software upgrades that include faster vehicle location, improved scheduling solutions, addition of runs during peak hours, increase in service monitoring tools such as status dashboards, and improved service control training and monitoring. Providers also continue to increase operator hiring efforts. Work is ongoing on the field surveillance program to monitor service quality and performance. AccessLink recently awarded a 5-year contract to TrueView to administer the program, which includes undercover investigative services that will observe and report trends and patterns of practices, including safety, customer service, fares, and scheduling efficiencies. Moving to customer service statistics, the average speed of answer for transit information centers was 9 seconds, falling short of the goal of 5 seconds, and representatives answered 98% of calls, just short of meeting the goal of 99%. New Jersey Transit received 67 commendations for April, and here are a few. An AccessLink customer says, "I wish to thank AccessLink for continuing to operate during this difficult time. It's reassuring to know that I have transportation to my job and back home. Your drivers have been following the current guidelines to wear a mask to the letter, and so have passengers. Again, thank you for operating during this difficult time." A bus customer traveling on the 116 bus from Woodbridge towards Perth Amboy contacted New Jersey Transit to say the bus operator was phenomenal and had an outstanding attitude. The customer is disabled and uses a walker, and was very pleased with the way the bus operator treated her and also appreciated the bus operator pulling close to the curb. A rail customer says, "I was stuck at Hoboken Terminal late Sunday night, technically Monday morning, when I saw a foreman to the trains waiting out front. He called cab companies to try and get me home to the Jersey City Heights quickly. He waited with me and did as much as he could to help. People like him make this big city feel more like home and less lonely. Thank you, Pete, for giving me the time of day and going beyond expectations." Next, we look at social media reach and engagement. New Jersey Transit social media messages were seen over 5 million times in April, which generated nearly 197,000 engagements and over 8,000 visits to njtransit.com. Let's look at some examples on the next page. In response to the COVID-19 pandemic, New Jersey Transit shared daily updates to keep customers and employees informed about ongoing efforts to sanitize stations and equipment, service changes to enable safe distancing, and steps to stop the spread of infection while supporting those traveling for location-essential jobs. And a reminder of the importance of transit in people's lives, the new college graduate on the right shared on social media a photo of her graduation cap, which includes a section highlighting New Jersey Transit's role in helping her get to and from school. On the following page, New Jersey Transit used a series of graphics to convey new protocols for customers and employees, including the requirements per Executive Order 125 to limit transit vehicles to 50% occupancy and wear face coverings while taking transit. The face covering creative in the lower left corner was featured in a publication from the American Public Transportation Association, APTA, on transit agency best practices in response to the pandemic. And the CEO of Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority, WMATA, liked this creative so much, they asked for permission to use it on their system with credit to New Jersey Transit. New Jersey Transit celebrated National Nurses Week by honoring nurses who work in the New Jersey Transit Medical Services Team. And New Jersey Transit's also working with the U.S. Census Bureau to help ensure a complete count for New Jersey, which is critical for the state's fair share of funding to help strengthen transit. Moving along to the next page, the New Jersey Transit Board of Directors awarded the initial construction contract of nearly $250 million to George Harms Construction of Farmingdale, New Jersey, to replace the Raritan River Bridge damaged by Superstorm Sandy. The new bridge will strengthen resilience during storms and improve service reliability on the North Jersey coastline. And on the next page, the New Jersey Transit Board of Directors also authorized a $4.1 million contract with FX Collaborative for design and engineering work on the Central Concourse extension at New York Penn Station, which will improve pedestrian circulation and access to train platforms. Moving to the next page, in support of New Jersey Transit's commitment to leverage technology to improve the customer experience, 14 new, faster, fully ADA-accessible ticket vending machines are being installed at stations. These TVMs offer more payment options and replace older machines in the system. New Jersey Transit will assess the performance of these new TVMs before rolling them out system-wide. And on the next page, New Jersey Transit introduced a fully responsive design to all pages on njtransit.com. as well as a new content management system that streamlines the experience across devices and screen sizes. Moving along to the next page, the first of up to 25 additional new articulated buses is now in service on the 126 bus route connecting Hoboken with Port Authority Bus Terminal. New Jersey Transit thanks the Federal Transit Administration for the $17 million grant award funding these buses, as well as the support of the New Jersey Congressional Delegation. And on the next page, crews are out throughout the transit system taking advantage of the lighter ridership to complete station cleaning and repair projects as New Jersey Transit prepares the system for customers' return, including power washing light rail platforms, as seen in the photo on the upper left, cleaning train station windows, doors, and fixtures, as seen on the upper right, repairing and replacing light fixtures on the lower right, and performing track maintenance like ballast stonework on the Atlantic City rail line on the lower left. On the next page, New Jersey Transit President and CEO Kevin Corbett spoke with Tri-State Transportation Campaign on what the agency is doing to combat the spread of coronavirus and keep customers and employees safe as New Jersey Transit looks toward recovery. Moving along, on Saturday, April 25th, Hudson Bergen Light Rail resumed partial service on the Westside Avenue branch at Garfield and Martin Luther King stations after the Jersey City Municipal Utilities Authority completed a sewer replacement project. Shuttle buses continue to operate at Westside Avenue station while early action work continues on the 440 extension project, and on Saturday, May 23rd, light rail service resumed at Westside Avenue station as well. Turning to the next page, among the heroes who keep the New Jersey Transit system moving, New Jersey Transit police officers have properly administered naloxone, also known as Narcan, 133 times over the past 12 months, with 131 successful recoveries. That's 131 lives saved and 131 second chances for those fortunate enough to have a New Jersey Transit police officer there to respond. Since the onset of the pandemic in March, officers have deployed Narcan 29 times. Each instance demonstrates their selfless commitment, even in the face of the increased risk of COVID-19, to protect the lives of everyone on the transit system. Moving to the next page, as of May 3rd, concourses in New York Penn Station are closed overnight from 1 to 5 a.m. for deep cleaning to further protect customers and employees. Trains continue to operate, and customers can access the station via the main entrance at 7th Avenue and 32nd Street for those trains. Newark Penn Station concourses are also closed nightly from 11 p.m. to 4:30 a.m. for deep cleaning, and customers can access the station during these hours via the Raymond Plaza East entrance. Moving to the next page, New Jersey Transit began offering employees access to COVID-19 testing at the American Dream site in East Rutherford in early May, and expanded access to a second site at Rowan University in South Jersey, followed by a third site at Fairfield Inn and Suites at 315 Davidson Avenue in Somerset, New Jersey. Testing is available to all New Jersey Transit employees at the East Rutherford site daily and at the Rowan and Somerset sites on Tuesdays and Fridays from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Turning to the next page, 170 finalists, including the New Jersey Transit app, New Jersey Transit Chief Information Officer Luqman Fazal, and Chief Technology Officer Bilal Khan, have been selected from thousands of nominations for the State Scoop 50 Awards, voting on 29th at statescoop.com. Moving on to the next page, New Jersey Transit thanks the Federal Railroad Administration for awarding two grants totaling $91.5 million, which are critical to the advancement of the Portal North Bridge project and the overall reliability of the NEC. This is a huge win for customers on the 450 New Jersey Transit and Amtrak trains crossing the Portal Bridge each day between New Jersey and New York City. Special thanks to the New Jersey Congressional Delegation for continued support that brings this project another step closer to shovels in the ground. And special thanks as well to the Rutgers University Center for Advanced Infrastructure and Transportation, or CAIT, for their help and partnership in securing the $36.4 million grant for the substation to strengthen resilience on the NEC. And moving to the next page, New Jersey Transit was also awarded $1.4 billion in Federal CARES Act funding. This provides a critical, though temporary, funding bridge enabling continued service for essential workers who are on the front lines of the coronavirus response. The pandemic has significantly worsened since the initial request in March, and a fuller picture has emerged of the breadth and depth of the financial impacts to New Jersey Transit. As such, as transit agencies across the country have done, on May 12th, New Jersey Transit made a second request for federal financial assistance in the amount of $1.2 billion to offset the dramatic loss in fare revenue and the increase in costs related to the COVID-19 response. And on the last page, to pay tribute to those on the front lines, New Jersey Transit joined fellow transit agencies across the country on April 16th and again a week ago on May 21st to sound the horn in honor of all the transit workers who are keeping essential personnel moving. And that concludes the operations and customer service report.
Thank you, Stuart. Board Member Fulton, any questions or comments?
Yes, good morning, everyone. And Stuart, thank you for the presentation. I particularly appreciate the employee commendations notifications. That's important. And I would say that indeed all the frontline employees should be commended, given what we're going through right now. One of the speakers made mention of heat as the stations are currently closed, and that sort of gave rise in my own mind to sort of a broader question I'm wondering if someone can be responsive to as it relates to what is the customer experience like right now as you're riding a bus or a train? You know, it's one thing to think of it in the context of the trip, and that's really important. I get that. But most of us who've ever commuted before understand that there's a lot that impacts the trip on the front end, during, and on the back end. So, you know, with issues like we're entering into the heating season, and so cooling season, and the 50% mandate, you know, I'm wondering if, for example, we're going to continue to see a lot more customers that are exposed to excessive heat, or customers who are being bypassed and have to wait an extended amount of time in the heat as a result of the 50% mandate. So is there anyone who can speak to that?
Well, I can offer a couple comments, and perhaps on the question as you mentioned bypass, which is something we sometimes see related to bus. Perhaps Mike may have some thoughts on that from the bus side, or Jimmy from the rail side. Certainly, keeping people comfortable is very important, and one of the conditions right now that I think people will see is there are many fewer people out on the system. So, in terms of the customer experience for somebody riding right now, for the most part, vehicles are a lot less crowded. In fact, very lightly, ridership is very light compared to what it would normally look like, normal meaning pre-pandemic, you know, ridership. That's the sort of classic image you think of a packed train going in at rush hour. It's not the case right now. So at least from that standpoint, there's certainly more room for people on board trains when they're waiting on platforms at stations, when they're waiting at bus stops and so forth. And then in terms of heat, I think as the summer goes on, obviously that will be something we pay close attention to in terms of making sure that vehicles, air conditioning on vehicles is in good shape. In fact, we have a protocol for when people reach out on social media, if they raise a question about air conditioning, or this is a year-round thing, air conditioning in the summer, heat in the winter, the social media team reaches out to operations, lets them know, and they immediately investigate either by reaching out to a bus operator or a train crew, make sure that there isn't an issue on the vehicle, and then we get that information back to customers to let them know and close the loop. And if there is an issue, there's a strict protocol for handling that. If there's an issue with AC on a bus, let's say, that bus will return to the garage, and another bus will be dispatched out to take over that bus's route, and that vehicle will be returned to its garage for service. Mike and Jimmy, from a bus and rail standpoint, do you have additional thoughts?
So this is Mike Kilcoin. To answer your question directly, Cedric, to at least what I believe the question was, is currently we're not experiencing a large number of bypass complaints. We have responded with agility to those areas that are seeing a higher level of ridership, to the point where we have a greater than weekday level of service on certain lines to accommodate that 50% mandate. As the economy starts to turn back on, that is going to become more the reality that we are going to encounter places where we cannot accommodate everybody looking to get on a bus at a 50% max capacity with the service levels that we have available to us. As New York starts to get turned back on, and those New York buses that can enhance the local services, which are the ones that are impacted right now, as they go back to the New York market to accommodate the passengers who will begin to ride there, we're going to see an increased incidence of the need to bypass certain stops because a bus will be at their 50% max capacity. Right now, we're not encountering a significant amount of that, but I can foresee that people will be waiting outside where it's hot in a bus shelter on the side of the road when they cannot board a bus because it's at 50%. We're going to need to balance that 50% mandate because, as you know, even if we were able to add the amount of equipment it would be necessary to add to carry the same number of people we used to carry, we would need twice the amount of equipment at least. And our infrastructure, as far as our origin and destination points, such as the Port Authority bus terminal, could not accommodate that increased traffic, even if we could find 2,000 more buses to carry that kind of a pre-COVID passenger load. So, yep, that is probably going to create some additional wait times for those available seats and perhaps some flex time where passengers can be encouraged to ride the system, you know, outside the peak of the peak and encouraged to work remotely. So I definitely anticipate some enhanced wait times during the summer, late summer.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate the honesty and the frankness. These are tough issues that are going to have to be dealt with, and my inclination is always to lean into them, you know, be creative, and at the same time be honest with people with regard to what the challenges are that we face. We're not going to be able to walk away from some of these realities until something significant happens. You allude to the 50% standard, and you know how we morph from that, move from that. I know is a discussion that's being held at very high levels amongst a lot of very qualified people. But until that occurs, we're left with the same numbers that you described. And so I raised it in the last call. I'll raise it again. I'll probably raise it next month. Because we have to keep our eye on the ball, and I believe in transparency and speaking to the issues as directly as we can, so that our customers recognize that they can trust us and that we're doing the best we can to serve their interests. So again, thank you. I appreciate that. I suspect the issue probably hasn't peaked or may not even get there as it relates to rail for some time, but I can surely see it being a bus issue fairly quickly.
Cedric, you know, it's Kevin. I just add a couple of notes to comments, you know, for Mike and Stu. Last night we had the seven-state transportation, you know, committee for, you know, the governors of the seven states from Massachusetts to Delaware that, you know, I briefed the board on earlier. But this morning, had a policy board meeting of UITP in Brussels. And on there, we had, you know, Singapore, EP in Paris, Oslo, et cetera, the UK, going over, you know, the different challenges. And, well, you know, without going into all that right now, but you mentioned the key word, you know, one, of course, are financial implications, all these things. But the fundamental thing is that we all came to really is how do you restore trust in public transit? You know, and that's you use the word trust. And how do you go from the current situation where you have competing pressures to, you know, get back to, you know, full ridership or, you know, people who want to ride instead of essential to now being whoever wants to ride public transit. It should be the preferential way from environmental and social, you know, equity issues. You know, there's a whole batch of reasons that we all know why we need to have a healthy transit system. But we also have to make sure that trust is tied into people feeling secure. You know, in a different era with the physical security or, you know, counterterrorism, you know, issues, and those we always had to be vigilant on. But obviously with health issues now, you know, that's a real dilemma that all the various states and internationally we're all coming up against. How do you get back to full, you know, without having those restrictions? What does it mean if you go from 50 to 55 to 60 to 70? You have rush hour periods. You're sort of going to have peaks and valleys. So we have a team internally that's working, policy team that's working on that, and certainly we agree that we want to be out ahead of those things or be part of and leading, you know, sort of the national debate. You know, the one common theme is, you know, there are variations from transit agencies around the country, around the world, on the size and, you know, of the rail car, the number of people in a rail car, number of people on bus, different models of buses, et cetera, but fundamentally they're very much the same. So how do we, you know, as an industry, nationally and even internationally, share those experiences and get with the best policies that provide safety for our employees, you know, and our riders, but all, and restores that trust that get people back as quickly as possible without over-promising something on the be able to carry ridership if their social distancing measures or while social distancing measures are still in place. So, no, your comments, you know, duly noted, and we'll be giving, you know, regular updates.
Thank you.
Board Member Gordon, any questions or comments?
Yes, thank you very much. And let me just add my thanks and commendations to all the staff for all that you're doing at this most difficult time. Just first an observation. At a time when our ridership is down 98% and there's no traffic on the road, I'm not sure how useful it is to examine on-time performance in under such extreme circumstances that we face today. You know, I'm just not sure what kind of message we can take from that. So, you know, perhaps it might be a good idea to modify the data that's being presented. The other thing I'd like to say, just to follow up on some of the points that Kevin was making, I do think it is critical to understand what people are thinking. What are our customers looking for in this new environment? This is sort of a basic principle of marketing. And I'm wondering whether it might be a good time to do some serious polling of our customers. I know Stuart has done some surveys in the past. This might be a good time to consider a serious poll of our customer base to learn what their concerns are and what they're looking for as we go forward. And that's it. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Board Member Rasmussen, any questions or comments?
I just want to thank everyone for the update. Very, very comprehensive. And I want to thank the other board members for the questions that they provided at this briefing. Thanks again, guys.
Thank you. Board Member Caulfield, any questions or comments?
Yes, just one thing, Stuart, you mentioned in the Access Link update, and I may have missed the name. Was it the you retain TrueView? Is that the name of the company? I just wanted to get some more details on what services they're exactly providing.
Yes, the name of the company is TrueView. It's TRUVIEW. That's the spelling of it. In short, it's a field surveillance program that's focused on monitoring overall service quality and performance throughout Access Link. So it includes investigative services, essentially people that go out and ride undercover to assess the quality of the customer experience, and then looking at you know, safety, customer service, fare policy, fares, and scheduling efficiencies. Those are the big points of the work that's being done. And if Michelle is on, she may have some additional detail to add as well.
This is Michelle Styler. I am on the line. Stu covered it. We're just starting out, and we have begun the training of these field surveillance personnel, and we're doing some online training as well, and we're hoping to start some ghost rides and inspection, but right now it's delayed due to COVID.
Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay, next is the Foster.
Joyce?
Yes.
Sorry, just Kevin, one thing I thought somebody may chime in just for Board Member Gordon to the point that he raised just on the customer survey, the one that we did last month and we'll continue to do, answering those kind of questions you asked, Bob, was we had over 50 as a scientific polling method with over 50,000 responses. So that survey information we gave last month, the last board meeting, or I guess whether it's board meeting, committee meeting, was, you know, fairly extensive and proper survey, and we'll be doing another one, you know, coming up next month as well. So we will keep those going. And as far as the metrics, so we can always look to add things. I would say on-time performance, one of the, you know, sort of a baseline that we always report. And one of the things that is interesting, though, is to show certainly in the case where one of our biggest causes of delays, as you will know, is going into New York Penn Station on rail or on bus going into 440 bus terminal. So traffic management on the bus side, or certainly the argument for a gateway having additional tunnel capacity, you know, different additional capacity at New York Penn Station, the expansion that's envisioned there, you know, shows what happens when you have a less constrained environment and you're able to move fluidly, you know, how much are cut, you know, the delays are cut down, that kind of stuff. So I still argue, I know what you mean, because, you know, with not a lot of activity, you know, you'd sort of expect that, but I think there is still some value in it.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Russ.
Okay, next is the cost of service update, Jeff Bernstein.
Thank you, Joyce, and good morning, everybody. This next slide presents key performance indicators related to our cost of service. We recognize that it is of limited use given the precipitous declines experienced due to COVID-19. However, we are presenting it as it is a legislative requirement. In April, across all modes and on an average per passenger basis, we recognize revenues of approximately $1.37 on costs of $59.68 for a system-wide recovery ratio of 2.3%. Per passenger subsidies of between $19.64 and $451.78 were required for bus, rail, and light rail service, with fare bus recovery ratios of 5.6%, 1.1%, and 2.8%, respectively. Access links recovery ratio was 0.9%. Thank you, and that concludes my report.
Thank you, Jeff. Board Member Fulton, any questions or comments?
No questions, no comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Gordon, any questions or comments?
Yes, I actually would just like to respond to Michelle's comment about the evaluation you're doing of the paratransit services. You know, I think that's just an excellent idea, you know, particularly in the context of the criticism that has been raised about the quality of the service of some of the vendors. It really would be a good thing to have these so-called ghost riders giving us firsthand reports as to how, yeah, how the program is working. So I think it's just a great idea.
This is Michelle. Thank you. Thank you. As we move forward, we'll make sure to have additional reports that we can share.
Thank you. Board Member Rasmussen, any questions or comments?
No questions, no comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Caulfield, any questions or comments?
No, thanks.
Okay, board members, that concludes the agenda for the Operations and Customer Service Committee. The Administration Committee meeting will begin at 10 a.m. Thank you, everyone.